You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Lynn Del Mastro Thompson. We talk about how she worked through a pretty big fear, a really big fear of public speaking and overall just being seen. Visibility. Fear of public speaking is, I think, a very common thing. Very common. You may identify with this yourself. Probably everybody watching and listening can think of a time or a situation where maybe you didn't want to be in the spotlight for a whole variety of reasons. And maybe you even have some times in your memory where you've had your own negative experiences having the spotlight shown on you. I think this story will resonate with a lot of people. I think you might be surprised how Lynn worked through this for herself. I know I was. And also some of the connections she made for herself about how she developed this fear over the years. All right. That's enough chit-chat for me. Let's start the interview. Lynn Del Mastro Thompson, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm super happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
Yes, I am. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. All right. I start all of my interviews asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So share with me, where are you?
So I live in Northern Arizona near Prescott.
Very nice. Very nice. We're recording this in second half of August. So I'm going to guess that it's not cool and chilly where you
are. No, but it's not as bad as people, you know, everybody thinks it's like Phoenix. It never gets to 118 because we live up at a higher elevation. So okay. 100 is kind of where it tops out.
That is still very, very hot. Okay, very good. So next warm-up question, what is your favorite way to transition from a time when you are busy to downtime?
Yeah, I think just giving myself that kind of mental reminder. It's like, okay, it's time to slow down. Like maybe even, you know, using some of the things that I use with people in the world, like taking a few deep breaths, coming into my body and just being like, yes, I know we've been in our brain for a long time. You've been working. Let's just take a few breaths and just like be present.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. All right. Topic of the day, we're going to talk about a time when you worked through a long-standing pattern of not wanting to be in the spotlight. Now, I am going to say that since obviously you are here talking to me today, that is showing clear signs that you have worked through that. You are not avoiding all of the spotlight, at least. Are you ready to talk about this?
Yes, definitely.
All right, let's do it. Okay, first let's talk about the version of you that was the person who was avoiding the spotlight. So you and I, this is our very first conversation. We don't know each other, but you shared on the intake form that you had a pattern of keeping your voice small. So how did that show up in your life as like a child and specifically a student and then later as an adult?
Yeah. So I want to kind of take you back, yeah, to that childhood time period and how I was really hiding in essence in plain sight. So let's kind of rewind the tape and we're back in my 10th grade history class. And I was drowning in this oversized hoodie. I was in a room that was probably about 80 degrees warm. So didn't really need that hoodie, sweating profusely, slouched down in my seat and praying that my teacher, who was actually my favorite teacher, would not call on me. And that wasn't because I didn't know the answer to the question. I typically would know the answer to the question. It was actually because I was terrified that if I spoke up, there were a bunch of boys from the debate team in this class. And I was scared that they were going to take my words and they were going to twist them into this battle. And to me, at my, you know, however old you are, 16 maybe, my 16-year-old self, that felt like a full-blown attack to my body. I would feel my heart pound, my throat would like tighten up and close, and I felt like my whole body just wanted to disappear.
Wow.
And so it was very, you know, this is like a very vivid memory of that moment and being in that class, feeling like I really wanted to show up and like participate, and yet I was terrified.
I think that all of us have had moments, even if you are not somebody who is fearful of speaking in public or being in the spotlight, I think that we've all had moments, specifically in the classroom, where, and maybe specific to high school and middle school, where you desperately do not want to be featured in the front of the classroom. But this sounds like this was a tough situation. So they were debate, the boys were in debate, but was it a debate class or?
It was not. It was just a history class. So, but they would take what they love to do as debaters and like bring it into the class, and like you'd give an answer and then the. It wouldn't just be, oh, you answered the teacher's question. It was like, oh, let's debate that.
And did they do it to everybody?
They did it to everybody. And so that was, you know, what I would observe around me. I mean, my biggest goal that I remember was trying not to have that happen to me.
As an adult, when you look back on this situation, do you think that the teacher was aware of the pressure that this was putting on the group?
I certainly don't think so, because he was actually a wonderful, wonderful teacher. He's actually somebody that is one of the few teachers I've kept in touch with as an adult. So, like, I don't really think he truly realized that that was creating this internal fear. But, you know, my 15, 16-year-old self didn't know how to, like, go to him and say, hey, you know, this is, like, creating all sorts of anxiety. I love your class. I want to participate, but I'm also terrified to participate because of this reason.
That's a lot to ask of a 15 or 16-year-old kid, in my opinion. I mean, some young adults will naturally be able to do that in an adult environment, but I think that for a lot of kids, it's a lot to ask. And I also, in my experience, some adults who are in the classroom as teachers, as aides, as proctors, whatever they might be, some of them are more tuned in to the performance anxiety and shyness that shows up in teenagers than others. I don't know. I don't know how they learn it. I've never been a teacher. I think that being a teacher would be really, really a hard job. So this is just, this is just my observation is as a parent and a step parent, as the kids have gone through the classroom.
Right.
So some teachers are very tuned in. Some administrators are very tuned in and others are not. So I think that, you know, there's a range. There's definitely a range. Okay. So how much, so this starts in the classroom with a very specific situation and you are very concerned about one specific thing happening. How does it work into your life as an adult as you get older?
Yeah, so kind of fast forwarding to me starting a business about 15 years ago. And I found myself anytime I was in a networking event and I had to stand up and introduce myself, my heart would pound. I would panic. And so, you know, this wasn't even speaking on a stage. This was like a 30-second elevator pitch. I remember watching, you know, as you would go around the room, you know, maybe there's 20 people in the room and it's like, oh, it's one person closer to me. Oh, it's one person closer to me. And like that growing sense of panic of like, all eyes are going to be on me and I'm going to have to speak up and say, you know, who I am and what I do. And I think I also learned to filter myself too through, you know, that young experience. And there were other bullying experiences I had. You know, this was just kind of the most vivid one from childhood. So I learned to kind of not show who I really was. And when I started my business, I would kind of sanitize how I talked about what I did. So talking about like energy healing, I would try to make that completely non-woo. I would try to make it sound very, very scientific and, you know, very palatable to everybody. And what I realized is, you know, that over time, that wasn't really working because people weren't really seeing who I was and what I did.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think that definitely there are a lot of people who get nerves for networking meetings. I'm not standing up and talking to other people in front of other people. I don't happen to be one of them, but I hear it from a lot of people that it is a thing that people really do get nervous about. And I think that also, so the sort of filtering yourself down and muting your personality and the quality of what you were doing. Sometimes we call that masking or performing.
And exactly.
I will say that I think that sometimes that is, you know, not because we're afraid, but because, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not really in the mood to have this conversation.
Yeah. And certainly there's been times, you know, in recent years, like you're in a lift, somebody's like driving you somewhere and they're like, what do you do? And you're like, oh, I really don't want to have this conversation with a stranger who probably is not going to be my ideal client, not going to be, you know, somebody who's interested. I think one time I said to someone I did energy work, and that person assumed I was talking about literal energy, like
working for the energy company. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, no, that's not exactly what I do.
I had, and it's not just limited to people who have, you know, woo type businesses or service type businesses. When my kids were little, I had a friend who was a pediatrician, and she would never, when we went places with the kids when they were younger, she did not ever tell anybody that that's what she did, because then people were like, oh, can you look at my kid's ear? Can you look at this rash? You know, it was like the instant right. She wasn't able to have time off. So that's not always, I think, a destructive thing. But in this case, how was it? It was impacting your ability to build your business, I think.
Yes, very much so. And kind of it limited my ability to get clients. It limited my ability to find other opportunities, you know, to put myself out there, because nobody really knew who I was. Like, I was just kind of this playing it safe, playing small person who, you know, wouldn't really stand up and say, hey, I'm Lynn, and this is exactly who I am. See me for who I am.
Yeah. So, all right. So before we talk about how you work through this, I want to ask about all the other people who were around you in your life in these various times. So like your friends, your family, your coworkers, your neighbors, did anybody around you seem to notice that you were really struggling with this, or that it made you uncomfortable, or comment on the fact that you would be better off if you could be more visible to people? Like, was this a thing that came up?
Not really. You know, the biggest thing I actually think about around this is with my mother. Like, she actually, I played into this pattern growing up. So she was very overprotective. I was the only child. So my mom referred to it as the mama chick with one hand syndrome. Yeah. And, you know, she would protect me. And growing up, she would actually, if there was a difficult conversation to be had, she would actually just jump in and do it for me. So I think that this is also kind of a layer of this puzzle for me, was that I never learned to speak up for my own self, because I was always used to, oh, mom will just like rescue me. And also kind of what I internalized from that, which I think was not what she really intended me to believe about myself, but I just saw myself as, I'm not capable of speaking up for myself.
Yes, that is a thing that can for sure happen with, it doesn't always, it's not like, you know, people are not computers. It's not like everything is always happens the same way, but sometimes we will try and help people, and what we're actually doing is creating learned incompetence, I think is what we call it, right?
Yes.
So it's
makes
like
sense.
Yeah, and so you just are like, oh, this is not my job, this is not for me to do, this is for other people to do, I'm obviously not able to do it. And sometimes, you know, that's I think a part of growing up for a lot of people. It is a I have like a variety of young adults. It is a really, really funny thing to be with kids when they're learning to do these things, and you're sort of pushing them, like standing right next to them, like pushing them, like you can do it, you can have the conversation, but you're there in the room and you are sort of thinking to yourself, this would be a little faster if I could just do it.
Right. And I think that's why part of why my mom also did it. She was like, you know, an Italian Jersey girl who didn't always have the patience of like standing back in the wings and being like, I'm just here to catch you, you know, if you need me, but you got this, girl.
Yes.
It was like, let me just do it, because it'll be faster if I just take care of it for you.
And then the grown-up version of that is that when you're learning to do something in an office, there's the season of that where the person who's very, very good at it is very fast at it, and they have the same sort of thing. It takes longer to train somebody in the beginning to do it than otherwise. And it's the same sort of process. It's like you've got to back off and let people learn how to do it on their own.
Exactly.
In order for them to do it. All right. So you're starting a business. At what point do you decide just intentionally, okay, this is it. This is time for me. I'm going to step more into the spotlight. This is something I want to do.
Yes. So about 8 years ago, I went to this women's conference, and I remember sitting in this room full of, I think it was about 100 women. Most of them I didn't really know. And through all of what people were sharing as speakers, I started to kind of have this realization, like, I couldn't build this business if I kept hiding. And there was this really pivotal moment of the event where the organizer said, would anybody like 5 minutes to come up and stand on stage and speak? And I remember raising my hand, and kind of it almost felt like an out-of-body experience because even though my heart was racing, my palms were sweaty, I like part of me wanted to run into the bathroom and hide. Like this other part of me was like, no, you do this. And so I raised my hand. She called me up to the stage. And as I walked up to the stage, I realized, because I had been teaching stress management to people for part of my business, I was like, oh, if I start taking some deep breaths, this is helping. I come into my body. And then I tapped into, I had been a dancer for most of my life. And that was the one way that I felt safe being kind of seen and in the spotlight. So I was like kind of dropping into my body, like feeling my feet on the ground. All of these kind of practices came in. And I got up there and I stood on the stage and I shared, with the audience for 5 minutes. And it was just such a powerful moment for me. And I received so much support. That was the other thing that happened, like right after I got off the stage. All these women were just like there, what you shared meant so much. It was amazing you got up there. And it was like my inner child who had been bullied and bullied and bullied received this like complete shift of, oh, there's people actually who are not going to laugh at me, say what I did was wrong, not accept me for who I was. I was accepted. And that kind of gave me the courage to start putting myself out there. And at the end of the event, we all stood up and, shared like what was our biggest takeaway or what was something we were claiming for ourselves. And I stood up in that room and I said, I am a speaker now. And all the women like cheering me on, and this like shift in my own mind of like, even though it still scared me at that point, like there was a part of me that was like, what am I doing? But there was the part of me that knew that like I was not the same person that I walked into that event a few days before.
That's amazing that it would happen so fast. Okay, so I have a couple questions that came up while you were sharing that. What do you think the difference was in safety and security between performing as a dancer and speaking in a classroom or in front of a group in a setting?
I think for me, it just always felt safer being in my body. Like, I don't think I ever received criticism for how I danced. Dance was just always joy, And then I was also up there with other people, usually. Like, I did ballet for most of my childhood into my teens. Every year we would have our annual performance. I was up there with my girls, basically, these girls that we had done ballet together since we were little kids. So it felt safe. And I think I also had always received, praise and compliments for how beautifully I danced. So it never felt like there was that trigger of, being hated on, being seen as like different, which was kind of part of my childhood bullying was, I was a girl, I was smart, I was the wrong religion for where I grew up compared to everybody else. So I was like, didn't fit in. It was the way I fit in.
All right, so then that's the next thing is what were you fearful of that could happen when if you spoke up? Like, what was the thing in the back of your head that was like, I, if this happens, this will be terrible?
I think one of the biggest things was just, being judged by people. Like, who is she to think she can do that? Or, oh, that sounds really weird what she does. Like, oh, she does energy work. Like, that's really strange. I mean, I grew up with two PhD chemists for parents, and they accepted what I did. But I think there was always that part of me that was like, felt like I wasn't as legit as they were, because I didn't have, a PhD in science and very like professional. And there's a
All
part too
right.
when you put yourself out there online too, because that was one of my struggles as well, is trying to put myself out on social media. I was afraid of unknown people saying mean things about me on the internet.
That does happen.
And
People,
it does,
yep.
yes.
People, strangers online can be sort of critical of other people online. That is a thing that absolutely happens. No. And so what was it in about this meeting and this conference, like, did when you were getting ready to go to the conference, do you think it was already marinating in your mind, like, maybe this is a place I can work on my visibility, or maybe this will be a chance that I can try this out? Like, do you have any inkling about what was sort of going on behind the scenes in your mind and the event, all of these things that made that the spot that you were like, all right, I'm going to try this. This is going to be worth it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I had kind of, by that point, I was investing in some programs for my business that were more around like visibility, trying to put myself out there on video, which, you know, was feeling uncomfortable doing that. So it was like I was kind of doing some work behind the scenes. And I think that kind of prepared the ground to go to this event and be ready to kind of step up there on the stage and say, I'm claiming this version of myself, not the one who's, you know, lived for the past 30 something years.
You know, it is a crazy thing. In 2025, visibility is, you know, completely different. So I think about how, like, for my parents and their parents, they were not looking at themselves all day long on a screen. They were not seeing pictures of themselves on their phone all the time. They were not doing video calls. They were not on any of the,
yes.
Like, you really could go through most of your life with the only time you saw yourself when you intentionally looked in the mirror kind of thing. And so it's a completely different way to live. Like, we
very
are
very much so.
It's, I mean, it's a little bit banana cakes. And, you know, like, yeah, you know, if you have a bad hair day or a sty or any of those things, it's like,
or
well,
you
the
wind
world
up with
is going to know.
Yeah, a pimple. Like,
yes.
You know, you're in your 40s and you wake up with a big pimple in the middle of your forehead. It's like, everyone will
Absolutely.
see you.
Everyone will see you, and then it will be there forever. All right. So you've talked about the fact that you made a connection between this, the avoidance of the spotlight and being seen and being bullied as a kid. This makes logical sense to me. You have an experience. I mean, I am not an expert, but you have an experience as a young adolescent where you have a negative experience. It feels challenging. It feels scary. And so you modify your behavior to not have that happen again. So did you uncover that connection just totally by yourself, or is it something that came up just based on, like, when working with somebody else, a coach, a therapist, a friend? Is this, how did you make this connection?
I think for me, it really was kind of uncovering that myself. I mean, I certainly had been in therapy. I was kind of familiar with the idea of like inner child, but I don't think I ever specifically worked on this area of my life, you know, in therapy. Maybe eventually it came up with business coaches of, you know, trying to put myself out there, grow the business, and kind of realizing, oh yeah, I think the younger part of me who was bullied is still showing up here in this room and kind of driving the car instead of being like, yes, that was part of my life's experience, but I don't have to let her be the one that determines, you know, how I grow my business.
It is definitely a thing. It's a really interesting thing because public speaking is one of the top fears that people have. And so, but then there are other people who don't have it. And it is one of those things where if you, it's a mismatch. Like, I think that lining somebody else who does not have it. So like the speech instructor, right? The speech and debate teacher who's in front, or a teacher, teachers are in front of people all the time. For them to work with somebody and be like, no, be brave and you know, speak up, it's kind of a disconnect because they don't probably have the same reaction to those situations as other people. It's like hard to help somebody. It's like, I know you think this is scary, but just do it anyway. You may not understand how scary it is, you know. May not understand. Yeah.
And for me, you know, the way I work with people is it's not always about just doing it anyway. It's about meeting the parts of ourselves that are scared, because I know that was some of the advice I always got from business coaches was like, just keep recording the videos, keep doing it, keep posting, it'll get easier. And until I met that part of myself who was like terrified and unhealed from, you know, the bullying, it never did get easier. It was just like
Yeah.
continually torturing myself over and over and over and making me think this is not worth it. Maybe I should just quit.
Right. I think that there's a lot of different ways that people generate the sense of safety and security. And when other people don't understand it, it's hard to show them how to do it. But most times, there are plenty of times, like, so where just, you know, push through it might make sense. But a lot of times I think it's just, you know, because people don't want to have the conversation, even if you're just talking about, hey, get on this roller coaster, you know, you sat in the line, you know, you want to do it. It's like, well, just do it and see how you feel. That's like, kind of like, well, maybe not, you know.
Yeah, just jump out of the plane, you know.
That's one of the things, it's not on my to-do list.
No, I know not on that mine because, either.
I know that because of other things I've done. And I'm like, if I had to, if it was like I would save the world, I'm sure I could do it, but I don't want to. And right. So, you know,
it's not fun to me.
Exactly.
Not on my, like, oh, I want to go skydiving. No, it's not on my list either. I'm terrified of heights. And that sounds like, no, that sounds like a heart attack waiting to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're supposed to do it for fun. Yes. So, all right. So you start with the 5 minutes on stage. This is a very big challenge for you. It's a tough experience. You get through it. It's a positive experience that has some support and validation from the audience. So you build on this. And this kicks off a season for you of personal growth. And one of the shifts that you mentioned is that you went through a powerful healing of receiving support from the room. And yes. So how did you talk more about that and say, and how it shifted you and what it meant for you to have that experience?
Yeah. So I think it just, what happened was I felt like the part of me that never got that in childhood, you know, the one who was always like picked on by everybody. I mean, it started in elementary school that I was picked on and bullied, and it got really bad by sixth grade. That part of me just, it felt like to be seen in a way that was like, I'm seen for who I am and accepted versus I'm seen for who I am and that's not okay because, you know, girls shouldn't be smart. You shouldn't be the wrong religion in this area. Like that makes you an outsider. Like I think that was the other piece of it there as I'm naming it, being an outsider. I felt like an outsider for most of my life. And when these women came forward and were like so accepting and so loving, I didn't feel like an outsider. And I know I came to that event and I sort of did feel like an outsider when I walked in the room. It was kind of like, what am I doing here? Maybe I don't belong in this room. And, you know, the sense of belonging was just a huge shift.
So that's amazing. I mean, it is definitely, there are people who believe that those safety feelings, those feelings of risk and safety, you know, tie back to when we were pack animals and we were trying to stay alive in caves and whatnot. And it is a very hard thing to not pay attention to, like when you were afraid. And so rewiring that and replacing it with it's safe for me to do this sounds like it would be a lot of work, but that you got some pretty strong cues how to create this safe space and move through.
Exactly. Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, just finding my own roadmap through this, you know, all of the things I had done in business coaching did not really help me. It was only when I was like leaned into my own skill set as somebody, you know, working with people with stress, with anxiety, and like taking that and applying it to this arena of my life. It was like, oh, you know, and that became kind of the foundation of the method that I created and that I use with clients is kind of that work and the pieces that I used for myself.
You are client number one. All right. So how has your life changed as you were able to shed this fear of being in the spotlight?
I would say it's changed profoundly. I mean, first of all, my business has certainly grown. Clients could find me, opportunities could find me. I mean, I've now been on lots of podcasts. I've spoken on some stages. I apply to speak on stages, you know, don't always get every opportunity you apply for, but I'm not terrified of, you know, I found actually enjoyment of being up on a stage. And I think it's changed my personal life too, because the more confident you are, you know, in one way, we're not compartmentalized. So, you know, how I show up in relationships, how I speak up for my own self, you know, if somebody is doing something that's not working for me, meeting my needs, I'm not kind of that was a pattern in my life too. It was like, I don't want to rock the boat. You know, I'm going to just hide over here in the corner and not tell you that that hurt my feelings or that's not working for me.
So there were like ripples throughout from your business life into your personal life that once you built the skill of being able to tell yourself you were safe and be safe in a spotlight, you were able to not only step in the spotlight with your business, but also advocate for yourself on a personal stage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's
You know, in relationships with my husband, with family, with my mother, that was one of the biggest challenges of changing certain patterns that, you know, were long-standing from childhood with her.
I can absolutely see that's one of the most complicated relationships we have, right? The relationships with our parents once we're adults. All right. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to talk more about what are the things you do, about your business, and how you want the audience to find you after they listen to this episode.
Yeah. So my work is really about helping sensitive, soul-led visionary leaders who know that they're here for a bigger mission, you know, just like I knew I was there for bigger things. But this visibility piece is kind of getting in the way. They're struggling with putting themselves out there, and whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to be that you want to speak on a stage. Like, that may not be everyone's goal, and I honor that. Like, maybe it's just you want to be a little more visible on social media or more confident at a networking meeting. So my work is about doing that deeper work of healing why it doesn't feel safe, healing your visibility wounds, giving you tools. It's not like here's a visibility content plan. It's like let's create a path so that when you choose however you want to show up, you can actually work through what's coming up, the jitters in your body, the racing heart, the knots in your stomach, and you can step out there and put yourself into the world.
Yeah, because the jitters, the racing heart, those things, sometimes those, if you're expecting them, they are just a sign that you're doing something exciting. It's a fine line between excitement and fear. And when, it's important to be, I think it's helpful and important to be able to navigate, I guess, not just a fine line between excitement and fear, but also then the more problematic, like anxiety and freezing that goes along with it, where you sort of stop doing the thing that needs to be
Right.
done and, avoiding sort of an even more social anxiety type thing where you're like, anytime there's a crowd, you might pull back. So good, important stuff. You have a special offer for the audience, which I'm going to share. You call it the Visibility Reset Kit, which is a nervous system safe toolkit to help you feel grounded, clear, and embodied before you speak, post, or share your work. So this is a very generous offer. You've given this everybody with the code 100% off of the price, and there's a link in the show notes wherever you're watching or listening to this episode. And the easiest way to get these links is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then I send them directly into your email box and you can just click on the links. So I want to thank you very much, Lynn, for that very generous offer. It's very, very nice. Are you ready for the final three questions?
Sure, let's
Let's do it. These
go.
are just for fun. All right. If you are in an airport and you're going to get on a flight that is not going to serve you a meal, as like none of them, as far as I can tell, serve meals anymore. But anyway, what is your plan of what you're going to do? Do you bring food from home? Do you buy indulgent travel snacks from the little kiosks? Do you just get on, eat the free cookies on board and be hungry? Or do you have another plan altogether?
I think for me, it depends on what airport too. Like if I've been there before and I know what they've got, like if I was flying out of Portland, I'm like, oh, there's good food there. Like I would find a restaurant in the airport. Certain airports, I'd probably pack something along and just have my own food.
All right. I get it. I get it. All right. What is the last thing that you purchased just for yourself and nobody else?
I was ac actually at a big event this weekend and I bought one of the speaker's books because it really spoke to my heart, her book and her journal.
Fantastic. All right. Last one. What is something that other people do sometimes that annoys you that you are willing to admit to all the strangers listening and watching the show?
Ooh. I think it's just one of the biggest things is around how people drive, like people tailgating, like cutting me off where we live. People seem to treat certain roads like it's like a racetrack, and I'm like, please don't do that. Can you just drive like a sane person? I would like to arrive like safe and calm and fine. So that's a big frustration at times.
Absolutely, absolutely. Road rage and crazy drivers, 100%. That is it. Lynn Del Mastro Thompson, thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. obviously. Subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.